You are listening to Studying Pixels, a podcast on game studies and video game culture. I am unfortunately not Jeff Keighley. I'm Stefan Heinrich Simond, a game studies scholar from Germany.
I'm Dan Hughes, a Japanese scholar from Texas, and I'm working on it.
And of course, you can find us every Sunday on studyingpixels.com and wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to have lots to say about the Summer Game Fest today, and we made a tiny change to the show's structure. We've been discussing this internally, and we thought maybe we're going to try something out and actually just get rid of our side quests segment.
Yes, but not, we should be clear, not getting rid of those discussions should they come up.
Yes.
So it's not like we're saying, all right, no more news articles, no more human interest piece, no more game updates. It's just when it's relevant.
When it's relevant, then we bring it in and then we have like a more focused show. The idea is also to keep it a little bit shorter. And we can obviously still bring in those articles. We just make an episode about it then. And maybe it's going to be a shorter episode or a longer episode. Who knows? You never know what's going to happen.
Yes.
On this very podcast. We're going to try this out for 4 weeks and see how it goes. And obviously, we would much appreciate your feedback. I know it always hurts, but the times, they are a-changing. And actually, this corresponds to my transformational process when it comes to the way I play video games. Because if you've been listening to the show for a while, then you know that I've learned over time a little bit not to be too obsessed with completionism and to instead go with the flow, or sometimes just leave things on the side. If something is not particularly interesting to me, if there is no inherent value in me doing it, then maybe I'll just leave it and continue on and enjoy my life, basically.
I think that's fair, especially as you have more commitments during the day and during the week. It's you don't want to make something that you enjoy like a completionist chore with video games, right? So I think we have the same, I don't think either of us felt that the side quests were a chore, but
no,
this will make for some more interesting conversations and more focused conversations, like you said. And speaking of the way that you play games, it should be noted, you have finished Elden Ring. Is that correct?
Yes, I am Elden Lord.
Elden Lord, my liege.
And I wish to be addressed as such henceforth.
Well, congratulations. What did you clock in at, like 200 plus hours?
Yeah, 210 hours.
Man,
210 hours for one playthrough, and I have a trophy completion rate of 70 something percent, I think.
Not bad. That's pretty impressive for one playthrough.
Thank you. Yes, I looked through the trophies and I know that there are a couple of things, like two or three trophies, that I could fairly easily get because they are just simply bosses that I have missed or overlooked because I didn't go down the particular path.
Yeah.
But I really got a lot of stuff. Yeah, there are a whole lot of like legendary armaments, for example, in Elden Ring that you must collect in order to get, I think, even a golden trophy. I'm not quite sure.
I think so.
But I even got that just like that because I've been so thoroughly exploring.
Oh, that's impressive, because what I usually have to do in those games is I have to backtrack and come up with a list of all the things that I need so that I can find them. So it's I'm very impressed that you've found them in one playthrough. That's pretty cool.
It's just because that's actually how I learned that I need to let go of some things, because admittedly, towards the end, like maybe even three quarters through, Elden Ring was still very enjoyable, still probably one of the best games I've ever played in my life. However, I just had this nagging thought in my head whenever I played it, this needs to end soon. I'm running low here. I'm running low on energy to continue and fight this. There's a boss called the Ulcerated Tree Spirit, encounter very early on in the game. And then you just encounter them, I think, another like 50 times throughout the game. And it just changes for the next 10 times when you encounter it, then you think like, oh, wow, all of a sudden this fight, I'm not prepared for it. And you panic and then you engage. The next 20 times, you just think like, oh, this again. I've beaten this dude like 30 times now and it still comes back.
Yep. Well, I think when you get to the point, you don't want to sour yourself on a game. And I think that I remember I almost got that way with Breath of the Wild, where I think I put off Breath of the Wild for longer than I wanted because I was worried about the completionist in me. And then when I played it, I just did what I wanted and had maybe one of the best gaming experiences of my life. So you got to kind of let go, I think. Yeah.
You got to let go a little bit also in favor of your own enjoyment, because if you have a long day and afterwards, maybe in the evening, you've got maybe 2 hours to play a video game. I just don't want to sit there and go along with a checklist to just basically work my way through something. It resembles work too much for me. That being said, one last thought on Elden Ring. Mm. Up until the very end, this game still continued to challenge me. And this is something that I find very impressive. Not the regular enemies that much anymore, because I had been at a level at that point that I was pretty strong, I would say. I was decently powerful so that I knew I could overcome the challenges. But then you hit this infamous boss.
Yeah.
And I think, should I say the name? Is that a spoiler?
No, you should say it.
The name is fine, right? It's Malenia.
Yeah.
and this is something
at this point. Yeah.
Infamous, yes. A boss that she's optional, completely optional. And I know that she was a really tough nut to crack at the beginning already. And over time, they have patched all kinds of ways out. So you cannot cheese her anymore. Like, cheese, when I say cheese the boss, I mean, you could, for example, glitch up a tiny area on the outside of the arena. And then you wouldn't get hit by her attacks and you could just take her down slowly. This is not possible anymore. And she's so powerful that was the kind of boss where I just felt like, I'm not even going to bother on my own. I'm just going to summon cooperators. And even then, it took me 2 days of like attempting in the evening constantly to take her down.
That's one of those bosses, like when I played Sekiro, where I thought, oh, maybe I can't do this. Maybe this is, I've reached a point in my video game career where I'm unable to play this boss.
But, yeah, I just can't play this game anymore.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was such an enjoyable journey. I got a wonderful ending that I'm very happy with. And I know that there are a lot more that I watched on YouTube. And it was such a satisfying experience. And I can only say for anyone who hasn't done so already, which I think half the world population has already, it's totally worth it. Mm. It's long, it's extensive, it's tough, but it's so worth it.
Well, I'm looking forward to chatting more about the narrative of it with you. And that'll be fun to get into. So congratulations, Elden Lord.
thank you so very much. And thank you out there for enjoying this show. If you do that, if you like it and if you want to help us make it happen, then you can support us by joining Studying Pixels Plus. Because, yeah, we need to keep the mics on somehow. Hmm. There you get all of our episodes entirely ad-free. You'll get a lovely sticker and monthly plus episodes. Go to studyingpixels.com/plus to find out more.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And in the meantime, we move ahead and have a chat about Summer Game Fest, because that's exactly what happened, I think, 2 days ago now, right? 3 days ago?
Yeah, earlier this week as you're listening to this.
Beautiful summer event hosted by Jeff Keighley, who has very much established himself by now as kind of the ambassador of video games.
Can we say we're going to talk about some highlights and lowlights of the show, but do we agree that Jeff Keighley's the best part of any of these? Just his his general demeanor and enthusiasm.
He's enthusiastic, he's charismatic, and most importantly, he's authentic.
Yes. Yeah.
How many times have we had these kind of shows on showcases where let's say you have a contractor, someone who's maybe a good host in general, but has no relation to video games, have them host such a show, and it just comes off as a bit weird. Whereas with Jeff Keighley, it's, I think, for the first time that I can remember that it feels so organic. Everything just clicks into place.
You can tell that he's thinking about it all the time. And that's something that I really appreciate because, like you say, you could hire whoever, but if they don't know how to pronounce game titles or they don't know the people who work on them, it comes off very quickly. And Jeff Keighley seems to be Mr. Networker with the video game community. So it's worth it, I think, just to watch him be excited about video games.
I must say, though, I'm getting a little bit worried about this influence of Jeff Keighley. Because the thing is that we had like several big events that spread throughout the year. And these events would be organized by different entities and would have a different framework.
Right.
Whereas now it feels to me like there are three big events each year: the Game Awards, the Summer Game Fest, which we're going to talk about, and there's Gamescom Opening Night Live, which is also hosted by Jeff Keighley. And it feels to me almost like as if you want to make it big in the industry, then you need to go past this dude. And I don't mean to say that that's his fault. I mean, he basically seizes the opportunity. He's got a good talent. He's very good at what he does, very dedicated and very passionate. But I wonder, are we going down a slope where we have just like these three major events each year, and then everything's kind of like split up in separate communities, such as the PlayStation State of Play, you know, the Nintendo Treehouse and whatnot, or Nintendo Direct. I find that a bit of a shame. I miss this kind of like integrating function, which the Game Awards have, I think, but it's all kind of framed in this, in this Jeff Keighley network.
I know exactly what you mean. And actually, maybe that's a good segue into the highlights and lowlights that we have, because one of my highlights is I'll be the optimist in this conversation and say that because everything is so fractured, I really like that Jeff Keighley is kind of the fulcrum point of these events, because I think that we were, during and after the pandemic, we were at this point where things were so disjointed and all of the companies were going their own way that there wasn't really like an E3 event. Now, literally, there's not an E3 event this year to bring everything together, bring everyone in. Even before the pandemic, Sony said, no, we're not doing E3 anymore. So to me, it is nice that there is my hope would be that it's not just Jeff Keighley is that guy forever, but that Jeff Keighley is establishing a role as this sort of, as you said, ambassador of video games, which is a cool idea, I think, to bring everything together periodically.
Yeah, he does really important work there. It must not be underestimated, because indeed, we've got these things such as console wars. We've got, in general, as a society, the tendency of people becoming more private and retreating from their public roles, becoming more attached to company names, labels, sub-communities. And I think it's very important, in order not to retreat too much into echo chambers, that you have a showcase such as Summer Game Fest or the Game Awards, where everything coming together and where I can see, for example, as someone who's a total Sony pony, I'm not excluding myself from that consideration, where I can see, oh, that's cool, that's on new games for PC or Xbox exclusives, which I'm probably not going to play, but at least I understand what they are and I can be in touch with that discourse a little bit. I think that's important.
Yeah, I think the awareness of it, because that's primarily what this Summer Game Fest felt like to me, was just sort of a reminder that video games are happening. not a whole lot of new and exciting information that came out, but yeah, something about it's like going over to Jeff Keighley's house, you know, we're going to talk about video games for a little while here, so everybody come on over, and just a quick reminder that this industry is cool, and then we'll see you next time.
Yeah, and there's always, if you go to Jeff Keighley's house, there's always like Uncle Kojima-san.
Yeah.
who always sits in the corner and is a little bit, always like a little bit of a recluse, and then he's like, you know, going through some books by the fireplace, and then sometimes he will just like slap the book close and everyone will look at him, and then he'll stand up and then he will like share his vision with everyone all of a sudden.
A brand new game that you won't appreciate until 3 years after its release is coming out.
yeah. He's like this kind of weird uncle of video games.
That's such a good way to describe Kojima. He is. He's the guy who's been around, you know, just as long as a lot of the other old favorites. And he's just this weirdo who we all love.
Yeah, very much. A weird uncle in a very positive sense.
Yes.
A very enjoyable sense. I think, though, that Summer Game Fest overall, if we give like brief opening statements, I found it a very mediocre show. It did not do much for me. It was 90 minutes long, and that is probably at least 30 minutes longer than it should have been. I feel like they didn't have enough to show, and that brought the entire thing a little bit to a level where I felt like, okay, this is really not the Game Awards, and it's not E3 as we knew it 5 years ago.
No, definitely not. I think that's why it felt more to me like a check-in in this, if I could call it that, where it's not... Actually, I don't know if you saw this, Stefan, but Jeff Keighley tweeted before the Games Fest, he said, I just want to make it clear that this is not going to be a lot of new announcements. This is going to be showcases of things that we know are coming and updates and things like that. So I definitely had a different expectation going into this that I don't think a lot of people shared. I think a lot of people were hoping for God of War and, Breath of the Wild 2 and all the stuff that we might expect from the Game Awards or E3. And that's just not what this is for, I don't think.
Not what it can be for, because if there was anything to share on God of War, you know where it would be, on Sony's State of Play. And if there was anything on Breath of the Wild 2, it would be at Nintendo Direct. They would do their entire Direct about that. They wouldn't just cram in like a 3 to 4 minute trailer at the Game Awards or something, but only after the news has already been out and the main part has already been shown at their own event, because that's what they'd want to draw all eyes towards. I think it's an important thing that such events happen, but I must say that we need to really temper our expectations when it comes to that. And maybe then we can take a glimpse at the highlights and lowlights of it in a nuanced and differentiated way.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. It was a little mediocre is a good word for it, I think.
Yeah. So you already shared a highlight of yours, which was Jeff Keighley, right? Jeff Keighley himself.
I think Jeff, just to circle back to that, Jeff Keighley and just the culture of Summer Games Fest. I really appreciate that. There's this, like I said, a check-in with the industry just to say, hey, you know, we all love video games, despite all our differences with consoles and company alignments and all that stuff. Isn't it cool to just talk about this great medium? So I definitely felt that watching it. And I'll always appreciate Keighley for that.
I think that Keighley is a particularly befitting host because he's not scared.
Yeah.
I remember, well, it's kind of it's kind of a prerequisite for any kind of hosting gig.
You shouldn't be horrified.
Oh, God, all these cameras.
Oh, what am I doing?
Major imposter syndrome there. But I do think that when I mean he's not scared, what I actually mean to say, like, he's authentic, not in the way that you would say, like, we need a real gamer on stage to host these things, but he's authentic in his engagement with video game culture. For example, I do remember that at the Game Awards, everyone was kind of like mocking him and having a go at him for not taking a sufficiently clear stance on the Activision Blizzard issue. And then he spoke out very clearly on the show.
Right.
And a similar thing with Summer Game Fest, where he very clearly addressed the war in Ukraine, for example, and spoke about a Ukrainian developer studio that couldn't show their game. Others might have just simply basically left that out because they don't want to get politically involved. You never know with the Russian market in the future, the consequences. Nobody wants to upset Vladimir Putin, right? But I think it's kind of cool that he addresses matters such as these, but also, you know, the aspects of diversity in a kind of organic and self-evident matter, because he knows that these conversations are ongoing in video game culture, and that's why they have their place at Summer Game Fest as well.
I'm reminded of you mentioned Kojima. I'm reminded of when he spoke out and said he wanted to be here, but there were problems with a certain company that wouldn't allow him to be here. And that takes a lot of guts. So yeah, I agree with you. I think he's not in your face or obnoxious about it. He's just honest and doesn't shy away from difficult topics, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not Jim Stephanie Sterling.
Right. Going directly for the throat on every situation, which again, I appreciate Jim Sterling for that. So it all has its place, but it would be a very different Summer Games Fest if Jim Stephanie Sterling hosted it.
wouldn't that be fun for like 1 year? Oh, just that being would like, be great. And then all you see is like mostly games that nobody knows, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's just like going to be the entire showcase is just going to be about like bashing Activision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every second, every 2 minutes.
Calling people out by name.
I was so excited here to show off our new gameplay for Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. And it's like, yeah, I bet you really like showing off how you mistreated your employees for years, didn't you?
Just like that, I get. Oh, I want this now.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Maybe in cooperation with Devolver Digital.
There you go. Yep. The inroads there.
Okay, so a highlight for me was that Summer Game Fest was really a great treat for horror connoisseurs.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy horror games, especially if you enjoy sci-fi horror games, then you had a whole lot of delicious things being announced.
Monsters in Space, the show.
Yeah. Yep. And one after another.
Yeah.
One after another. They started off, I think, with Aliens Dark Descent, mm-hmm. if I recall correctly. Then they went in, which is going to come out in 2023. Then we got a little bit of an extended look at the Callisto Protocol, which is going to come out on 2nd of December, 2022. And the Callisto Protocol is probably one of my actual highlights of the entire show.
I agree.
We'd seen it before, so it was not a surprise, but it's just so delicious to see what can develop, literally develop, if you don't have like EA interfering with the process and basically strangling the idea behind Dead Space and just basically let it flourish and become what it is supposed to be.
I'm really excited for that because Dead Space is one of the few games in recent memory. I say recent memory, you know, in the last decade or so, that I remember actually being scared in, because there's a lot of games that I play where I more appreciate that it's horror, because I really love horror movies. I'm a big horror fan. I don't get scared easily, but Dead Space did scare me, and I get the same vibe from Callisto Protocol. And
it's by the devs.
Well,
at least the core part of the creative team.
Well, that's why games. I'm excited, and I think that what they showed gave me that kind of tingling feeling of, oh, this is going to be a game to play in the dark at night.
Yeah. It's just this dedication that they say very clearly in interviews as well. We want to make the scariest game you've ever played.
Yeah.
That's the goal. That's what we're going to do. You know, we don't need any kind of, surprise mechanics or something in there. We're just going to try and scare you. And if you enjoy that, then get the game and have fun with it, basically. There's also such things like Layers of Fears, which we can address a little bit later on because we're going to have to talk about it in a bit more detail. There's Fort Solace, a space thriller with Troy Baker, who plays Joel in The Last of Us, who is now in every video game.
Yeah.
And Roger Clark, who actually, and I didn't know this just by the name, I only identified him by his voice, is Arthur from Red Dead Redemption 2.
Mm, great voice.
And both of these are really amazing voice actors, and presumably there are a whole lot more wonderful talents involved in the creation of Fort Solace. It's going to be like a space thriller, and it was directly followed by a game called Routine, which had been apparently announced a decade ago, and then I don't know what happened. Maybe it slipped behind a shelf or something.
Yeah,
probably. And they just found it, and they're like, oh,
we wanted to make Summer Games Fest as
well. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is still an old trailer. Still good.
Yeah.
Edible.
Still edible.
So yeah, we've got a whole series. We've got five different horror games. Four out of them are space horror games. And that's, cool. On the one hand, because if you like that genre, you're really going to enjoy it. On the other, and Jeff Keighley kind of hinted at that, it's also, it kind of blurs into one another. When I was watching through Summer Game Fest, I thought like, if you closed your eyes for 30 seconds and opened them again, you could not quite tell, is this still the same game or is it already the next one? Because they look so similar.
It just feels to me like a weird scheduling thing. Where it all kind of blended together, and I'm excited for any new horror game, but yeah, I think that contributed to the mediocrity feeling that we're talking about, where it's just okay, well, looks like we're getting a lot of my favorite article that I read reacting to it was they're shooting Troy Baker into space. So that's the most enjoyment I got out of those trailers, apart from Callisto Protocol.
I think from what I've seen, I must say I'm most curious about Routine, the game that fell behind the shelf, because I have no clue what that's going to be. The trailer looked very intriguing, and it looked like a more slow-paced, creepy game. We'll see what comes of it.
Yep. Well, I had that, speaking of just games that were shown, another highlight for me was the Cuphead DLC looks really fun. The Delicious Last Course. Did you ever play through Cuphead?
Yes, I have. It's great. A wonderful video game.
It's beautiful. And so I'm obviously very excited for that just because I love that style and I love the game. I will say that I perked up at that, but you just lyrically referenced the Game Awards showcase of it, which had this beautiful old-timey song that was sung live by these women dressed in these incredible costumes from the 1910s and 20s. And so it did kind of feel like, how do you follow that up? You know, it was.
But I think they followed it up in the best way possible because they just said, we brought a boss fight. And then you just watched the whole boss fight from beginning to end.
Yeah, that I did really appreciate that. So, yeah, I'm excited for that. I think I don't want to downplay how cool the Cuphead DLC is. But I think it goes with my thought that this is more of a check-in event. Like, remember, these are still happening as opposed to look at these big announcements and releases.
Do you know whether you can play Cuphead online by now?
Oh, I don't know that. That would be fun to co-op.
I think, when it came out, it was only possible in couch co-op, if I recall correctly. And it might be that that is still the case.
Yeah, but that would be a lot of fun. We should look into that more.
Yeah. I want to bring a low light, though. Because something that Cuphead was the exception for was that there were so many guns in this showcase. I wrote just down here with a thumb down, I wrote guns, guns, guns. That was one of the first thoughts that I had while watching this showcase. I don't have a categorical problem with shooting a gun in a video game. We did a whole two reading episodes actually on the matter, but it just gets old quickly when every trailer starts with some kind of like, you know, and then it's like, and you just feel, is this again another game? What am I going to shoot? Here I'm going to shoot aliens. Here I'm going to shoot some kind of like soldiers. What am I going to shoot here? Demons. It's just so samey and it lacks ideas.
Well,
I wish that there was more creativity in how we engage with the world than just looking down, aiming a gun.
Yeah. And I think it just feels very samey. And I think it goes into everything kind of blurs together, right? I don't have a prerequisite for what a game needs to be because I enjoy all kinds of different games, as I know we both do. But I totally agree where the third time you see somebody cock a gun, you're like, all right, another, I know what to expect.
Yeah, I think it's a problem with creative diversity. And I mean diversity not in a political sense here, but in a sense of aesthetics and ideas, also narratives. And I do think that also ties into a political problem because we kind of have this almost default way of engaging with the world in video games, which is with violence, where in Call of Duty, for example, the trailer, you never really had any section where the character would even, you know, like lower their gun, even if they did other things, right? It's like you always look at the world while aiming down the sights. And I think it gets old, it's boring, and it also conveys a certain message. I'm not saying, I'm not proposing a model of direct causation, but I'm saying that it kind of gets us into the habit of just assuming that, that's how conflicts are resolved. That's how the world just works. Shooting or violence is just like a self-evident part of what we do in video games. And I think that's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that it just, at the very least, you mentioned diversity. I would say lack of variety. I'm not a big first-person shooter fan. I do play them, like I like them, but I don't seek them out. And I would think even if I did seek them out, I would feel kind of fatigued by it at this point. But I don't know. It's just the feeling that I get. I agree with you. Well, one of my lowlights is something that we kind of touched on. And that's, even though I appreciate that Jeff Keighley is sort of keeping everything together as the ambassador of video games, that fracture feeling is definitely apparent in this setup. Because as you said, you're not going to hear about God of War because that's going to happen on the State of Play. You're not going to hear about Breath of the Wild 2 because that's going to happen on Nintendo Direct. You're probably not going to hear about Elder Scrolls because that's going to happen on this Xbox Bethesda thing. So
yeah.
I think the idea of the the big convention or the big event where everybody goes to sort of hawk their wares and let everybody know, that seems to be downsized at this point, where everything is sort of, there's too many avenues to figure out your news. And I do kind of miss, you know, E3 of 2004, where everybody was there and they all showed what was coming. And there is something lost there, I think, when everybody's split up like this.
Yeah, E3 was also almost like, I mean, it always had a certain performativity to it. Mm-hmm. It was always a performance of where each company, each publisher, and each game is represented in a certain way. I still remember very fondly when Sony went into a completely different direction than everyone else and just said, like, you sit down in a decorated cinema with a live orchestra and we're just going to show you three games today.
Yeah.
And everyone was kind of like baffled, and it's just gameplay running for like, I think, 18 minutes of God of War accompanied by a live orchestra. And you just think like, wow, this is amazing. Just as much as I want to say that what Microsoft did was exactly the opposite of just saying, here, we've got like 80 different world premieres for you. And that also has its own aesthetic quality to have this like quick fire thing of like, these are all the things that we're going to bring to the table. It's kind of lost amongst all these different split communities. And it feels to me now that E3 is essentially gone. I mean, will it ever be able to resume its place? I think not, at least not the one that we were used to and the one that we reference when we say E3. I think the Game Awards will take that place.
I think so. And that's kind of a shame, because it is nice to have everything in that one place and have that feel like this yearly celebration of everybody involved in the industry. But I will say there is obviously some upsides to having this diversity here, where you, I don't know, maybe if you want to seek things out, you know when a company's showcase is going to be, so you can kind of know what to expect when you go there. So it has its ups and downs, but it definitely felt to me like, all right, I personally think E3 will not come back. I don't think it can. Between the problems with the pandemic and now everybody being so fractured, I think it's kind of a relic, which is kind of sad, but also we got to move on. So here we are.
My guess is actually, it's just speculation, but I would assume when E3 returns, and I think they will definitely try to bring it back, the thing is, what can their place possibly be? We've got all these different events, like streaming events that all the publishers do. We've got Summer Game Fest, which is like let's say, online event. It's also like a streamed event, right? With no local audience so far, because it was created during the pandemic, if I recall correctly. And it has this live streaming status of bringing the community together. I think when E3 comes back, they're going to have a long conversation with Jeff Keighley. And potentially, that's just my speculation, arrange for E3 and Summer Game Fest to merge into something where E3 is basically kind of the local celebration of Summer Game Fest, which is like a streamed online showcase.
You may be right. I'm thinking back to Jeff Keighley's Twitter feed, where when E3 was announced that it was not going to be happening, he seemed devilishly delighted about the future. So.
Ah, such a shame. Yeah. Well, shall we take a brief break?
Yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we are back talking about Summer Game Fest, our high and low lights. And I must say, I criticized there to be a lot of guns. And at the same time, I've got one highlight that actually has a gun in it. And it's not Call of Duty.
No.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I might enjoy Call of Duty and play it when it comes out, but it was not a highlight of the show. Instead, I picked Metal, Hellsinger.
Oh,
very weird
this
one.
This looks so cool. This I'm glad you put this as a highlight, because the only reason I didn't list it as one of my highlights is because you put it as yours and I didn't want to be repetitive, but boy, oh boy, this looks so cool.
This is basically a total Doom clone. This is as if you took Doom. It looks uglier, obviously, and it's going to play worse. It's like made by a small team and they probably are very inspired by Doom. And it goes all out on bringing in high profile metal singers and musicians and making it all about rhythm. It's essentially a rhythm game where you play, let's say, a budget version of Doom, but you have to shoot and act in the rhythm of the music. And I think that's just an interesting idea, because while I was playing Doom Eternal, I constantly felt like that was the case already. And Metal Hellsinger basically makes it a reality.
I think you're right. I think it's playing through Doom. You probably feel like, oh, I love that this moment of, you know, a kill shot or something is the music changes and it feels like everything is, you know, connected in one way here. I feel like the people behind Metal Hellsinger said, well, wouldn't that be cool if that was the whole game?
Yeah.
And yes, it would be cool. And I can't wait for it.
That's probably how it came about. They probably were sitting together and they were like, oh, I really like Doom. You know what I like the most about it is the music. And they're like, yeah, me too. It's like, okay,
I guess that. Yes.
Let's do that.
I was going to ask, are you a fan of rhythm games generally?
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a fan. I don't have a problem with a good rhythm game every now and then. I'm a musician and I love making music. And naturally, I'm curious about rhythm games as well. But I think I didn't play many. The last one I played must have been Persona Dancing All Night or something. That was a Persona 4 rhythm game.
Yeah. Well, I really like them. There's something really satisfying to me about the not so much Guitar Hero or Rock Band, but games that integrate music into the gameplay like that. Like one of my favorite games for the 3DS was Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy, the game that took Final Fantasy music and made it, you know, you have four little characters who level up and everything, but the way that you fight, quote unquote, is by hitting the beats of different Final Fantasy songs.
Ah, so cool.
I'm all about this. I think it looks cool. It's a great idea and a really great way to break up the monotony of all the Troy Baker in space games.
Especially because it's so different. It's like you can easily justify having lots of guns in your video game if there's some kind of interesting idea attached to it. And in the case of Metal Hellsinger, that's definitely the case. I don't remember whether we actually got a release date, but it can't be far off. It's surely one that I look forward to.
Yeah. Well, I am heading into the low light territory right now. And so one of the things that I feel like we should touch on is Naughty Dog going to rest on their laurels for the rest of time? Because I love The Last of Us. I think we all do. We all appreciate The Last of Us. But if the theme of Summer Games Fest was fatigue and monotony, man alive, like I don't care about this remaster or this re-release of The Last of Us. And the reason I don't is because we already had one a couple years ago for the PS4. And it just worries me that this incredibly talented studio is not, it doesn't seem like they're looking to do anything new. And that is very worrisome to me. So I could not care less about this re-release of The Last of Us, to be frank with you.
I feel the same way. I mean, only talking specifically about that The Last of Us re-release. Because it is, right? We had the original game, then we had the remaster, and now we have The Last of Us Part 1, which is going to be, again, the entire game remade from the ground up with the engine and the technical capabilities of The Last of Us Part 2. I think it does look nice, like the brief comparison shots that they showed, where you see like how Ellie's face changes and how she just seems a lot more as an authentic person as she seemed in The Last of Us Part 2. And also the idea of bringing, you know, the advanced AI functionalities from the second game and the combat from the second game into the first. All of that makes perfect sense. And I do get the idea that you want to give people an opportunity to play a definitive version of that game, because The Last of Us is still great. The only issue that I have with it, though, is that it's such, they make such a big deal of it, because it's, I mean, okay, fair enough. They put a lot of effort into this. This is not going to be just like a little bit upscaled or something, but it's also not like a major announcement that in this case was placed at the end of the show as almost like, you know, this is the big thing that we end the show with. And for that, it just wasn't strong enough. It was just like, okay, Last of Us is coming out again, I guess. Cool. That's not gonna be the reason why I play it again, because I've played it twice already, or three times, I don't remember.
Yeah.
But okay, I mean, it's fine, but it speaks to how mediocre the show overall was, that is kind of the point that it ended on.
I totally agree. And I think that for me, I do understand, as you said, the hope or the want to have a definitive edition, but I always just think, well, I thought that's kind of what the PS4 re-release was meant to be, like a director's cut kind of situation where everything was upscaled. So I get it, but it just seems like it's too quick. And the reason that I said that I was worried is because it reminds me of other game companies that do this, where they just stick to one game forever. And I mean, the obvious example is what? Skyrim, right? I mean, how at a certain point it smacks of, well, we know you'll buy it again, so we're just going to re-release it. You know, not to diminish any of the work that's going into this definitive edition, because it does, as you say, look incredible, but I just don't care. And I feel that I worry that a company like Naughty Dog will fall back on just their old hits and not look to the future. And that's a shame if that's what this is heading towards.
They have to be quite careful, because the thing is that of course you can say we want people to have this definitive version to experience the game, but really by now everyone who is genuinely curious about The Last of Us will have already played the game either in its original form or its remaster, maybe before Part 2 came out. And it might be that now this comes out and this is something more of a long burn, where it's like throughout the next couple of years, whenever someone wants to go into it, they can turn to The Last of Us Part 1. But it doesn't seem to be a reason for me to replay it, because I really, unless I feel like I want to go back to it anyway, this alone is not motivation enough to make me return to it.
Well, I'll give you a couple of other examples of situations like this where I'm more amenable to it, because it feels more like the point is what you just described, like keeping this for longevity's sake, right? Ghost of Tsushima had a PS5 re-release, Death Stranding also, even Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade. All three of these were games that kind of came out at the tail end of the PS4's lifespan. And so Neo and Neo 2, right? Like there's a lot of games that came out on the PS4 that they upscaled a bit, made look really nice. They run really well on the PS5. And you can tell that the idea behind that is sort of, well, the PS5 is going to be around for at least another 5 or 6 years. We would like this to be the way that you experience these games. Fine, totally fine. But to make such a big deal out of something like that, like in all three of those cases, even Square Enix didn't really make a huge deal out of Intergrade. And they had way more content than this Last of Us remake is having in it. So...
Well, imagine at the time when The Last of Us came out originally, I played it back to back with that game company's Journey, and I can't possibly fathom what it would look like for that game company to make such a big deal out of every single Journey re-release, where they're like, we're bringing Journey to PS4, Journey remastered, and then like, Journey, the definitive edition.
The definitive edition.
Like, come on, it's just, basically just, never mind.
Yeah.
I do think they need to watch out. They need to be careful. I have still enough faith in Naughty Dog and in their talent that I would assume that apart from this, they're working on something new. That's what they hinted at Summer Game Fest as well.
They did.
When Neil Druckmann was there and he said that he basically confirmed what everybody knows is that he's working on a new project that he's not yet willing to share. They also brought two other things that I think are a little bit, well, interesting and peculiar at the same time. The first is that they showed a concept art of The Last of Us multiplayer game, which is going to be inspired by the Frontiers mode, which was already part of the first game originally, and I played it for quite a bit. It was very enjoyable. So they make its own thing out of that. They are really milking The Last of Us.
Well, and I do wonder, because who knows what goes on behind the curtains at these big companies, especially when Sony's involved. Maybe it's the case that as well as The Last of Us has done, they're basically saying, hey, you can work on this new project, but you owe us this, and you need to put this out. I don't know that that's the case, but it very well might be. I mentioned Square Enix. I mean, the reason Kingdom Hearts 3 didn't come out for a decade was because it was tangled up in Final Fantasy 15 that needed to come out beforehand. So these things do happen.
Yeah, although I think that with Naughty Dog, it's most likely the case that they just grew so big now that they can have several subdivisions and teams working on different projects, having a couple of people that are working very consistently on bringing this The Last of Us Part 1 to life, and then probably a bigger team that works on this multiplayer game, which might be interesting. I'm surely interested to see what such a multiplayer-focused Naughty Dog game might look like. Mm. And then, obviously, the biggest team probably working on the pre-production of that still secret project. But they also brought one screenshot from the Last of Us TV show, showing off the actors. No context, no real further announcements as to release date or any such thing. And I must say, considering that this last section, that was the end of the show, the big Naughty Dog section, they really stretched things very thin. It felt to me like...
Screenshot.
A screenshot of the TV show without any interesting or substantial information, maybe apart from, you know, the original actors of Joel and Ellie being part of this TV show as well. But it felt to me like, you know, when you have a slice of bread and you just have like a little bit of butter left and you just like be rubbing that butter all over the bread to make it, to infuse it with that flavor a little bit. That's exactly what it felt like to me. It was so long, that segment, for what actually it offered content-wise, that I found it a little bit disappointing.
Also, I don't know if you feel this way, but the idea of a TV show about The Last of Us, what are we upscaling the imagery for? Doesn't it feel like The Last of Us is already a cinematic experience? I don't know why we need a TV show.
Well, yeah, I was wondering the same thing, and I'm really curious to see how it ends up, because we have got these YouTube videos that are like The Last of Us supercuts or Last of Us like movie version, where you can watch like in 4 hours you can watch all the cutscenes attached to one another, basically like a very long film. And I'm not sure. I would imagine, or I hope, that Naughty Dog is aware of this, that these things exist, and that it's already a very cinematic game. And I hope that they don't overestimate their capabilities with this TV show, or overestimate, potentially underestimate even their audiences. Because I would assume if this TV show is tied and closely tied to the events of the first game, then a lot of people that have played that game might not actually like it, because they might say, at best, it's neat, but it's not the same. Because The Last of Us really relies, no spoilers, but in its ending, it really relies on the tie that you have with Joel, with the characters, with the interactivity and the choices that you make in order to make a point. The TV show will not, just by virtue of the linear medium that it is, be able to replicate that.
I totally agree. I have nothing to add.
Okay, but I've got something to add, because The Last of Us and the Naughty Dog appearance fits into something that was, I think, the biggest low light that I have here on my list. I called it remasters galore, because in actuality, most of the big things that we've seen or that were sold to us as being the big announcements, they were remakes and remasters. This is The Last of Us is probably the biggest one, but also layers of fears, which is something that I much appreciate it. It's cool. Please give me more layers of fear. But the thing is, it's kind of layers of fears, as far as I'm aware, it's going to be something between a remake of the first of the two existing games and a sort of sequel.
I'll say this. I had two reactions to that. My initial reaction was, didn't this come out 6 years ago? am I losing my mind? And then I realized that it was Layers of Fears, plural. I will say that I really like Layers of Fear, and I think that the story lends itself to doing something really interesting with adaptation. And I mean, it's a game about art and about the horrors of trying to put yourself into your artwork, right? So the idea of doing a remake in that context is interesting to me. So of the remasters or the remakes, that one is the one I'm most interested in, but it's still, okay, not really. I don't know how new this is.
Yeah, it's The Last of Us, Layers of Fears, and the third one is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, where I was honestly confused when this was announced. I think it was announced before Summer Game Fest, but they were like, hey, here's a new look at new mission and so on. And I don't quite understand. Maybe I should have researched this a little bit more, but I'm aware that Modern Warfare 2 came out in 2009, I think, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So this is also like a remake with some additions to it, as far as I'm aware. Like, please correct me if I'm wrong. You can write into podcast@studyingpixels.com. But I find it very indicative of what was actually there at the show, that these three things, the big ones, all relied on established series basically bringing a remake or remaster or some kind of addition to the table rather than revealing something entirely new.
I think it worries me a little bit because I have nothing against remasters. I really liked, at the tail end of the PS3 and then for most of the PS4's life, there were a lot of great remasters and HD collections and ways to experience games that you wouldn't be able to just buy retail anymore. I really appreciate that. But what's worrisome to me about particularly The Last of Us and this Call of Duty thing is that it just feels like, I said it already, we know they'll buy it. So we're just going to re-release it. We're not going to do anything different. We're maybe going to add a level or a map or something, but that's it. And we know that people will get it. And that to me doesn't feel so much like a motive to get people interested in your IP or to bring people back who maybe fell off the wagon a little bit. It just seems like really a cash grabby, cynical thing. And that bothers me.
Yeah, at least in the way it is announced. If it were hypothetically part of some kind of announcement reel or like some quick fire announcements where, you know, then it's a lot different because then you can just say something like, hey, here's this wonderful game. Here's this character that you knew 15 years ago and it's back, remastered, coming out then and then.
Right.
That's a whole different story. But these kind of, well, they really are their own category because they are a remaster on the one hand. They also a remake because they change some things substantially and they also add stuff. That seems to me to be like a new category that doesn't really fit within the categories that we have so far. I'm talking about video games.
I agree. I think the thing it most resembles to me is we talked about Star Wars a couple weeks ago when George Lucas, every time he released them, he would make changes. On the one hand, you think, okay, it's a director who wants to make his vision look like what's in his head. But on the other hand, it's like, well, are you just doing that to do it at this point? That's kind of how it feels.
Shall I bring my last highlight?
Yes. Let's end on a fun note.
It's a very short one. I just noticed that Fleur Marti, she's the executive producer at Warner Brothers Games Montreal. She was talking about, I think, Gotham Knights, when she came on screen. And I noticed that she was wearing two Apple Watches. Not one, but two on both hands. I think that is such a power move. I mean,
it really is. Yeah.
I mean, I have an Apple Watch on my left wrist, and I really like it. It's like a wonderful device. I can immediately see my next appointment, which is, by the way, going to be an interview for this very podcast. And I can see my reminders and my activity and the weather and everything. Cool. But what if I had another one on the other arm where I can at the same time
do this? Do you think, I wonder, because when I noticed that too, and it cracked me up, and I had this thought in my head that, you know, she's in New York and she's like, oh, I need to know the time in Montreal. So, but didn't realize that there's a world clock feature on the Apple Watch.
It's like, instead of changing the watch face, you just buy a second one.
Who has time to swipe left a couple of times? I need...
It reminded me, do you know the show Veep?
Yeah, about, yeah.
And it's like there's this vice president and she's trying to somehow, you know, basically seize power. It's a political comedy and her assistant is like all over the place with like iPads. He's got like always like three different iPads that he's juggling. But you always like, you know, you can just switch apps. You know, you don't need to have all of these iPads.
So funny. It's so endearing too, because who knows why she's wearing two of them, but whatever the real answer is, it's not going to be as funny as whatever we're thinking.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Okay, well, shall we gather our conclusive thoughts on Summer Game Fest? Do you have something still?
I do. I just concluding thoughts. I think it, just to reiterate what we've been talking about, I'm not upset that this happened and I'm not really disappointed, but I think it's because I went in with very tempered expectations. And also, this year is kind of strange for video games because Elden Ring came out and it feels like nothing else will come out until 2023.
Yeah, this is the thing. If I may briefly interrupt you.
No, please.
Not only Elden Ring came out, because I looked up all the games, like the biggest games that have come out so far in this year. Yeah. And that is, the list goes as follows: Horizon Forbidden West, Elden Ring, The Quarry, which came out just very recently, Pokemon Legends Arceus, Sifu, Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, Ghostwire Tokyo, Tunic, and so on. In other words, it's not it's completely unsurprising that the show is so thinly stretched, because all of this stuff came out already. It was so far an absolutely amazing and super dense year of video games, and there's just not that much that's slotted in for the next couple of months.
Well, and what's interesting about that too is that we've talked before on the show about how the future of video games is going to be quarter one and quarter two, because it used to be that quarter four, the holidays, that's when people made the big bucks, that's when all these games released. But the pandemic showed that, well, actually quarter one, like January through really June, I would say, it's kind of this fallow period in games. So let's capitalize on that when nothing's coming out. But then, of course, everybody releases it in that time frame. So now all the games are out. And I just think, all right, well, not a whole lot of things that could be announced that weren't already announced on other platforms like the Nintendo Direct or the State of Play. So realistically, it's checking in with Jeff and Uncle Kojima and seeing if he's in the corner there. Just celebrating video games, which it did feel like to me. So I did enjoy that aspect of it very much.
I could imagine that still there's like something like Forspoken and potentially also God of War that would come out this year still. They are not really, I'm not sure whether they confirmed. I think they're slotted for somewhere 2022. I could imagine that they still come out.
Let's hope. Maybe we'll end the year on some other big releases.
Yeah, I would definitely. That would be a much bigger showcase, I think. God of War Ragnarok, absolutely. Forspoken. Well, everyone, thank you so very much for listening to our discussion of Summer Game Fest 2022. Please submit your thoughts and questions to studyingpixels.com/contact. If you want to support us, you can get Studying Pixels Plus. Just head over to studyingpixels.com/plus to find out more. Follow us on your podcast app and on social media. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.